Good afternoon, Medical Education's podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva again, the editor-in-chief from the Journal, coming to you from a very snowy, unusually snowy for mid-March Vancouver, but weather that I'm particularly happy for, given that I just returned from a 5-day ski vacation. But I get the delight upon returning of speaking with Dr. Ronald Chamberlain, who is chairman and surgeon-in-chief at the St. Barnabas Medical Center and also professor of surgery in the New Jersey Medical School. And we're going to talk today about a paper that Dr. Chamberlain has slated for publication in the May issue of Medical Education entitled Residency Selection, Do the Perceptions of U.S. Program Directors and Applicants Match? Thank you for speaking with me today, Dr. Chamberlain.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, my pleasure. I was intrigued to get a chance to talk with you because the paper, as much as the title I just listed is quite a broad one. It does focus dominantly on an increasingly hot topic, not only for health professional educators, but for people from all walks of life, which is the use of social networking and other activities that in particular our youth are becoming more and more fluent in and forcing the rest of us to try to catch up.
Yeah, the impetus for the paper really came out of a number of things. Here at St. Barnabas, we actually deal with a variety of different types of medical students. We deal with students that come that are standard American medical graduates, went to American college, gone to American medical school, now applying to residency. We deal with students who are U.S. or Canadian medical students who didn't get into a U.S. or Canadian medical school, who then sought foreign medical schools offshore, typically in the Caribbean for the most part. And then we also have foreign medical grads from, you know, grew up in Ethiopia, Tanzania, someplace in Slovenia, went to school there, and then are applying for residency here. The likelihood of matching into a U.S. medical program is dramatically affected by where you trained. Clearly, there's a significant advantage and a preference for U.S.-trained U.S. medical students, and then probably some preference after that for U.S. or Canadian citizens who trained in foreign medical schools, and then last, probably foreign medical schools. Part of that maybe is inherent bias. Certainly, a large part of that is many hospitals and universities don't allow you to sponsor visas, so that limits your ability to match those. We wanted to really, the purpose of the study was to see twofold, what do these different groups of medical students, namely U.S. medical school grads, U.S. and Canadian grads who go to foreign schools, and foreign medical school grads going to foreign schools, what do they perceive that's important to program directors in terms of the match, and are they in line with what program directors are important? And then a separate part of that that really grew out of the study was the importance of social media. You know, it's particularly important for foreign medical grads who aren't in the States, who may not have the ability to interact, phone calls, et cetera, regularly. How they're perceived is oftentimes perceived by what they project of themselves on different social media sites. And while we know the students and the residents, Generation X, Generation Y, the Me Generation, whatever you want to call them, is very adept at Google and Twitter and tweeting back and forth using Facebook, we wanted to see how adept the program director generation was, you typically those in their 50s, and whether or not they ever used social media in regards to making decisions on choosing applicants for different career paths in their own programs.
Right, and the answer was fairly clearly, first and foremost, that it is being used by
at least the answer was clear. I mean, what we actually found, and we actually surveyed all of the program directors in the country, and we were pretty impressed to get about 46% of them responding, that about 20% of them report at present using the internet to judge an applicant's either worthiness or unworthiness for their program. But more importantly, about 56% reported that even though they weren't currently doing it, they plan to do it in the next 2 or 3 years. And the part that I found most important for applicants to be aware of was the fact that almost universally, when they looked at the application, they really used it primarily to downrank an applicant, meaning that looking at their Facebook page, they really got a more unfavorable impression of the applicant than they had from their interview, and that was 88% of the time, than they did a favorable application. Only 5% of the time did they use it to upgrade an applicant because they either saw it, they were impressed with family pictures, the way they presented themselves in a professional manner. Usually they found the applicant actually presented themselves in an unfavorable way, either some pictures of themselves engaged in activities that would not be perceived as professional. And those are things I think the applicant needs to be very aware of, particularly how they set the privacy settings, how anything they do really, even in the virtual realm, can ultimately affect on their ability to be successful in a residency match.
Yeah, I want to come back to that, but just before I do, let me ask. I know one of the challenges with many application procedures to any phase in medical training is the importance of transparency and alerting the applicants to how they're being evaluated. Did you get any sense, either anecdotally or from your data, as to what these programs, the 20% or just under currently, who are using these resources, how they're describing them to applicants?
See, we only purely an anecdotal, and that's just actually from surveying the 12 program directors at our own institution. Nobody notified the applicants at all that they were looking at their social websites, and namely the primary site they used was Facebook, although there were other sites such as Google and Student Doctor Network that people went on. Nobody notified nor provided any degree of information to the applicant that they were looking on a website. And when queried on that, they really replied, really, when a person posts it out there, it sets their privacy settings wide open. They're setting it out there for anybody to look at, from their best enemy to certainly prospective employers. And they didn't feel an obligation to let applicants know that their websites may be surveyed and or looked at in order to gain a better understanding or a better example of who the applicant is beyond their 30-page typed report, which typically presents them in the most favorable way as possible. Their reference letters, which similarly also typically, you don't usually choose people to write letters for you who you think are going to be negative, and then the 20-minute interview. They thought it really gave them a more holistic, total view of the applicant in terms of their professionalism, and they felt no obligation to let the applicant know that. If the applicant had the opportunity to set privacy settings and limit what anyone could see to just their friends or their family, if they've decided to present it out to the whole world, most of the people we surveyed felt that that spoke to something about the applicants.
So what would you or your colleagues or your participants say to the argument that I've heard expressed that some of those things are part of an individual's private life and therefore they don't necessarily speak to the professionalism of the individual or the way in which they would interact in a professional capacity?
Well, I think that's a great idea. And we sort of asked that question in the survey we did to program directors. And almost invariably, the response was that professional students, particularly student doctors, are held to a higher standard of professionalism. It's a quality that serves as the foundation for the social contract that exists between the medical profession and society in general. So that students should not be surprised to find out that behavior that they decide to present to the world about themselves can serve as a general judge to the person's behavior and demeanor. That professionalism extends beyond the confines of the hospital or the classroom and really extends into how they're representing the entire profession.
Right, and I suppose in addition to the general concern about the lack of awareness of the sorts of issues you're raising, it does become particularly problematic when you realize that there does seem to be a bit of an uneven playing field and that some applicants seem to have better awareness of how these things are being used than others. What were some of the variables that you found that were influential in terms of the match between the resident postgrad director and the applicant?
Yeah, it was actually fairly dramatic in terms of how the different classes of applicants perceived social network would be used. For example, while almost 60% of U.S. grads, 59% of non-U.S. grads, and 55% of foreign medical grads, so pretty consistently, used Facebook, whether or not they felt program directors would look at it varied greatly. About 52% of American grads said that they felt program directors probably were looking at their Facebook page, whereas only 30% of U.S. foreign medical grads and only 14% of foreign medical grads in general felt that the program director would ever look at that. So I think you haven't set privacy settings limiting what would be available. The fact that program directors are looking is available to all. It automatically disadvantages foreign medical grads who may or may not post things that could be viewed as unprofessional on their website.
So I didn't have a chance to ask you this ahead of time. I don't know if you have kids of your own, but presuming that you have many that you're counseling at various ages about moving into medical school or beyond, is your advice simply to make that entirely private? Or
what? Yeah, I have kids of my own, a 20-year-old and 18-year-old.
Yeah.
That has been my advice to them, that I wouldn't post anything on your website in regards to at least public knowledge that you wouldn't want our minister to see. That's sort of my knowledge. It's totally different when you have the ability now through really sophistication of social networks to set up your close group of friends, things you can limit to your family, two or three friends. And the setting of privacy settings clearly gives you the ability to make decisions on who can see what and when. I mean, there are clearly, I think, certain things that probably should never be depicted on websites because I think digital media never goes away.
Right.
Even though some can say they've deleted it, it's always there somewhere, in my own opinion. But there are clearly things that which you would not want your mother to know about or your father to know about, which they probably did when they were kids also. But I think it's really a matter of setting privacy settings or just deciding at least around and during the time as you move forward to the match to just remove those things from your website. Get them down. Take them down. If you're not going to set privacy settings, get anything down on your website that isn't presenting you in a favorable light.
Right. On the other side of things, it's difficult to predict the future, in particular in the world of technology where things are moving so quickly, but use of these things is just going to become more prevalent, if anything. But do you have any other additional insights into where these sorts of activities might be leading us?
Oh, I think that there's no doubt that in the future, as we move to totally digital applications, paperless applications, this is for the first year, the U.S. match was really a completely paperless process, which we just completed last year. We ask them now when they submit their application to give us their cell phone number. I can see in the future people requesting your Facebook page name so that people can log on and take a look at what you're posting, just as we now request your email, your Skype address, and other things that make you easy to locate or easy to get a hold of. I can see that for certain. Some people actually, oddly enough, even on their CV and applying for residency, list their Facebook page. This is my Facebook name. So I hope would certainly be that those people take the time to look at their page, determine whether or not there's something that could be perceived as unfavorable on that page and to get rid of it. Oftentimes, Kevin, I'll just make this point. It's not the applicant that posts pictures of themselves.
Right.
Getting inebriated or smoking marijuana, you know, at a dorm party.
Yeah.
Those aren't often the things that actually program directors comment upon. It's more the wall that they make public. So, for example, were I to pass on some racist joke about President Obama or some joke about homosexuality or some other religion, and I just posted it on your wall because someone posted it on my wall, that now becomes public knowledge.
Right.
And it's information on your wall. So, you know, if that's your public wall, people can believe and perceive that maybe these are your biases and your prejudices as well, even though they can just be something that I posted to you or you posted to me, and I really haven't even looked at it. But because my wall is public, it becomes an impression of people's belief. Oh, he's into racist humor or into comments that are politically incorrect and the like.
Yeah.
So oftentimes it's not the applicant, but it's what they allow to be posted on their wall in a public way.
Right. The notion of people putting their own sites on their CVs is intriguing because, at least for those with common names, I can imagine directors will come across others with the same name who may be acting completely differently and may misinterpret somebody else's Facebook page as belonging to the applicant.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the information that we encountered has also actually been duplicated by medical schools in that up to 60% of medical schools have reported having issues with students posting to their Facebook page, which either painted the student and or the university in less than a favorable way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly appreciate you raising awareness of these issues, and again, hope that the listeners of medical education, who are predominantly on the education side themselves for obvious reasons, have the opportunities to pass on these messages through their networks and make sure that those who are applying internally or externally become more aware and help both the program and the applicants get a better sense of who they are as individuals and as institutions, and that the matches become more optimal as a result. Thank you for this work. I look forward to seeing its continuation.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate the time to speak.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'll just close by reminding our listeners that I've been speaking with Dr. Ronald Chamberlain from St. Barnabas Medical Center, New Jersey Medical School, about a paper that's going to come out in the May 2012 issue of Medical Education called Residency Education: Do the Perceptions of U.S. Program Directors and Applicants Match? Appreciate your time, and I'll speak with you all next time. Mm-hmm.